And now, just before our next programme here on Radio 4, an urgent news flash. News is just coming in of a patent new mosquito trap, which has been invented by Dr. Jan van Strabismus, whom God preserve of Utrecht. This breakthrough in insect control is said to consist of a fat human arm painted on a plain wall, beneath which the pest control operative sits twanging a miniature violin that exactly reproduces the shrill note of the mosquito in flight. Thinking they are following their leader, the problem insects settle on the arm, causing a little bell to ring, and that section of the wall to incline inwards, precipitating the mosquitoes into a small bath of marine glue. The doctor says that this way, all mosquitoes are guaranteed a sticky end. Perhaps that news flash wasn't quite so urgent after all. We present Beachcomber by the Way, selections from the humour of J.B. Morton, with Richard Ingrams as the author.
Hello, morons.
Interruptions by John Wells as Prodnose.
Well, takes one to know one.
You're a bastard.
With the considerable talents of Miss June Whitfield, Mr. John Sessions, Miss Joan Sims, Miss Patricia Routledge, Mr. Simon Greenall, Mr. Brian Bowles, and Miss Henrietta Garden. Beachcomber by the Way.
Greetings, my public. It is I, the great Beachcomber, here. Yes, once again I have deigned to descend amongst you, accompanied as ever by a large, ungainly object.
By which I suppose you mean me.
My dear Prodnose, you flatter yourself. But then, who else would render you such unwarranted attention? No, Gargoyle, I refer to the piano, upon which I shall now perform by way of welcome this philosophical verse.
Life is mostly froth and bubble, two things stand like stone. What is in another's trouble, courage in one's own.
There.
Starting the series by encouraging drunkenness, are you?
Far from it, sheep-tick. I have often aired the opinion that alcoholic indulgence offers no practical solution to the trials and frustrations one daily encounters in life.
Ah, I'm glad you agree with me on that.
Yes. A good stout boot seems to be the only answer. Begone, oaf.
Ah!
After all the months away, I still haven't lost the touch. Nor Prodnose, I'm sorry to say. However, let us hurry on from that sad thought. We begin with news of an old friend.
When we think for longer, our happy days hold by. Our past is my heart, it is just so, and we need the
chapel, the early mark, new smoking.
That notorious pubby school Narkover reassembles on Monday for the new term. Considerable excitement has been generated by the surprise announcement that young Mount Falcon Foulenough, a relative of that infamous Narkover old boy, Captain De Courcy Foulenough, has won a scholarship to the school. However, as one of the governing body commented,
"Since the boy has not tried for a scholarship, the word won must be a euphemism. How he acquired the thing is beyond my comprehension."
Showing what little he knows of his wily headmaster, that scruple-free pedagogue Dr. Smart-Aleck. Mount Falcon Foulenough is described by those who know him as a very quiet boy, too quiet, whose mild look probably conceals a character wayward enough to satisfy his famous uncle, who admits he has not seen the lad since he was a baby. Mount Falcon lives in a remote Devonshire village with his widowed mother, Lavinia Foulenough, a cousin of the famous captain. Eager to give his young relative the best possible start to his scholastic career that money and forged promissory notes can buy, the captain arranged to meet Smart Aleck at the Fleece, a public house close to Knockover, to discuss terms.
Cheers.
Now
then, Smarty, the first 11, the Scripture Prize, and a glowing report to send home to his dear old ma at the end of the year. Come on now, name your prize.
Sorry, De Courcy, but if these are genuine foul enough, he's sure to win ample at cards to buy his own place in the Socrates by
true.
The The old school's going crazy at the prospect of his arrival tomorrow. Even the Soames gang are worried. He is a genuine foul enough, isn't he?
Well, oh, no doubt, no doubt.
Yes, that's how rumour has it, anyway. Another brandy, Captain?
Oh, make it two, you cheapskate, what?
Next morning, 8 new Narkover boys arrived at the headmaster's house for the new term. but nobody had eyes for any but the quietest and most unassuming of them all.
Excuse me, sir, but my name is Mount Falcon Falnoff, sir.
Owing to the reputation which had preceded him, the senior boys treated him with unwonted respect. As for the younger boys, they locked away their wallets and gave him a wide berth. Even Dr. Smart Aleck, when he shook hands with him, kept his free hand on his watch chain and seemed to be surprised when he emerged from his first encounter without any article missing. Mount Falcon's silence and his obviously feigned modesty and timidity terrified even the Soames gang, accustomed to impudent new boys, who immediately produced packs of cards in order to curry favour. It was barely an hour after the start of the school day before Mr. Snudder, Mount Falcon's foremaster, was in the headmaster's study with news of a stolen fountain pen.
Aha! Snudder! I was expecting to hear from you sometime today, but before morning break. Oh, marvellous! This concerns Mount Falcon Falconath, I presume.
Yes, headmaster. A fountain pen's gone missing.
Only a pen? Well, it's early days yet. Whose was it?
It was Falconath, sir.
Splendid! What?
Yes, I'm afraid so. Redvers Major swiped Falconath's pen and he came bleating to me about it.
Very clever. Going for the sympathy vote, I bet. What did he get of Redvers Major's?
Nothing. I asked him. What? The idea apparently had not even occurred to the boy. And when Mullins came up halfway through the lesson and shuffled a pack of cards expertly in front of him, Falconath just stared fixedly at the jotter until Mullins had got bored and walked away.
I see what his game is, Snudder. He's determined to play the innocent. False sense of security and all that, don't you know? Well, don't let anyone forget that young Mount Falcon is a foul enough. Keep an eye on him.
Aye, will do, Headmaster.
Oh, and, Snudder?
Yes, Headmaster?
Find out what Redford is asking for that pen. Might make rather a nice souvenir.
Next day, the prefects made their move on the new boy. Using his own pack of cards, one of them managed to win £17.11 and 6 from Mount Falcon, and when asked for the money, the young Falconath said he would have to write home for it. He refused 43 offers of a loan at the usual interest, saying he thought it wrong to borrow money, and further refused an invitation to subscribe to a fund got up to buy a place in the soccer team for Moody, a talented fourth former.
So, tight-fisted as well as a prig, eh, Falconath?
Yes, why should you be the only one not to subscribe? The deal is Moody makes us a fiver for every goal he scores. Yeah. We could be quids in with this.
Listen, Bonington told me that last term you made this collection and Moody was passed over.
Yes.
Why? Because a science master stole the money and used it to get his own candidate into the team. Now, isn't all this a lot of trouble for nothing? And isn't it simply disgraceful?
Well, I put in 3 guineas last time.
Suppose he's got a point.
I reckon Miller waked off some of it.
Oh, no, I didn't.
You did.
The group around Mount Falcon broke up into smaller groups and quarrels began. Whether it was disgraceful or not, nobody cared, but certainly many agreed that their present system seemed to be a lot of trouble and expense for very little return. Dr. Smart Aleck surveyed the scene in disgust from an upstairs window.
So, that's his plan, eh? Divide and rule with this revolting pretense of priggishness. Well, we shall have to put a stop to it. Mr. Skillet?
Yes, Headmaster?
Be so kind as to ask Soames to come and see me.
Soames? Strike the crows. Yes, Headmaster.
Soames, leader of Narkova's most feared gang, was a horrible overgrown lout of 19, who had only twice seen his father, fleeting glimpses between his parents' long prison sentences. Under instruction from Dr. Smart Aleck, he and his gang at once set to work stamping out this namby-pamby nonsense, as the headmaster called it. Boys who were inclined to listen to Mount Falcon were knocked down, informed against, framed, robbed and threatened. This juvenile reign of terror ended only when 6 forged half-crowns, a pack of marked cards and a stolen ring were found by Soames himself in young Falconath's overcoat pockets. Smart Aleck received the fallen angel in his study.
Well, young Falconath, they tell me you're in trouble again. What's this I hear about rings and marked cards and forged money being found in your pockets?
They were put there by someone, sir.
Don't say. How odd, how droll, how truly bizarre. So, why not put all the stuff in someone else's pockets, eh?
It would be wrong, sir.
But it was done to you.
Two wrongs do not make a right.
Who told you that? Not your uncle, I'll warrant. Run off now. You repel me, my lad.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. And so the battle went on. It also prompted a swift exchange of letters. Lavinia Foulenough to her cherished son.
My dearest boy, what on earth are you doing with your money? I want you to enjoy yourself, but I cannot afford to keep on sending you more pocket money. And how do you manage to lose so much of your clothing? Is the school laundry at fault? Try to be more careful. You tell me that Fuddock, your roommate, is a receiver or fence. Is that a football term? And really, dear, you must not refer to any group of boys as a gang. It gives a wrong impression. I hope you're doing well at your work and that the masters are pleased with you. Kisses, your loving mother.
Mount Falcon Foulenough to his mother.
Dearest mother, how I hate this school. The shoes you sent me were sold by Fuddock to pay his card debts, and he says he now has his eye on two of my new shirts to sell, and I found a sapphire ring in my coat pocket yesterday, and two boys fought about it, and a master took it, and he tried to get me to buy it back from him. The inkpots in our form are full of red wine, and Cadson Minor, who's always been last in everything, is first now because he says he has a letter written by Mr. Snudder, our formmaster, to a greyhound trainer. Your affectionate son, Mount Falcon.
The situation at Narkover grew worse, with honest practice threatening centuries of tradition. After the failure of another attempt to discredit the young Foulenough, this time by planting forged postal orders in his pyjamas case, the exasperated headmaster called an emergency meeting of the Narkover staff.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, the pernicious activities of Mount Breadenmilk must be curtailed. We all know that objections to gambling come only from the losers. I mean, do the winners ever complain? Does the boy who acquires a place in the school team by wise outplay ever snivel? No, it is the boy who has not the wits to get on who talks of bribery and corruption. Gentlemen, if Killjoy Priggish raises its hideous head where our fathers drank of the Pyrrhian spring, we must cut it off.
So, then, Headmaster, what is it you propose we do?
Well, I'm afraid I haven't the faintest idea, Mr. Chancellor. But I am sure he can't keep this act up for much longer. You'll see.
You better be right.
For once, the headmaster's assessment of the young Foulenough's character was to prove correct. Quite by chance, Mount Falcon hit upon a new way of protecting himself from exploitation by the boys or ill-treatment by the masters.
Dearest mother, I'm getting on better now. I find that if I can tell the bigger boys and the masters things they want to know, they stop bullying me and giving me no marks. It isn't telling lies, Mother, because I only pass on what I overhear, and I don't invent anything, and some of them are so pleased that they try to reward me, but I tell them it is a pleasure. When I get threatened now, I get let off for giving bits of news, and I got full marks at Latin last week, not because Mr. Clatchett was favouring me, but because he was pleased with me for telling him what Mr. Boyle was going to do about some letters. Now I see why Uncle liked this school so much. Your affectionate son, Mount Falcon.
Hello, and thank you for calling Foulenough Home Removals. I'm afraid no one is able to take your call at the moment.
Foulenough, it's me.
Smarty, hello. How are
you? Look here. Have you been writing to this nephew of yours? He's invented the lowest form of sneaking I ever come across. In fact, he's an unpaid informer.
So it ends by my odious nephew getting the better of you all.
It isn't funny.
It is. A free information service? What a sublime idea. Provided he makes a bit on the side, of course. You all set out to get what you could out of him, and he's turned the tables on you. Just think of it, your toughest lads beaten by that sanctimonious little horror. He is a file enough, after all. And when he finally realizes that the smart thing for him is to cash in on all his knowledge, some of you are going to have to fork out a fine tune, believe me.
No, he wouldn't, would he?
Why not? He is a foul enough.
But a few days later, Mount Falcon sent the following letter to his worried mother.
Dearest mother, will you ask our vicar if it is wrong for me to take money from boys who want to buy my silence about bribery and stealing, and then to tell on them all the same?
I don't do it to get the money, but there is no other way of getting them to tell me what the others want to know. For instance, yesterday I got 10 shillings for telling one boy I wouldn't say where he had hidden a watch he stole, whereupon a master gave me £1 to tell him where it was hidden. I was thus able to do my duty, and the master told on the boy and sold the watch to someone else. I tried at first to do my duty without taking money, but the head told me it was very wrong and upset the school tradition, so now I take the money. I have just over £800. Your loving son, Mount Falcon Foulenough.
That innocent letter home sealed the young Foulenough's fate and brought to a swift conclusion the awful epidemic of rectitude that had threatened to destroy forever the Narkova way of life. With the help of Mount Falcon's impressive savings, Lavinia was able to remove her sweet child from the rough world of Narkova and install him in a new experimental public school, Dirtington Hall, which aimed to allow the true nature of children to flower in an environment free from the tyranny of rules, regulations, school uniform, and lessons. Here Mount Falcon soon learned to despise authority and jettison respect for others in the pursuit of self-expression, and after a mere 3 weeks of unsupervised learning, was expelled for burning down the dormitories. Tainted at last with the real world, Mount Falcon was, of course, welcomed back to Narkova with open arms, much to the delight of his now doting uncle, who needed a contact inside the school to help blackmail one of the kitchen staff.
Aha! And what are you typing? A letter of resignation, one hopes?
Yes, and I shall be forging your signature to it later. Do you spell Prodnose with one X or two?
What? Let me see.
By all means.
But this isn't my letter of resignation.
No, I was merely playing with you. And I apologise to all those listeners whose hopes were falsely raised. This is, however, something even more wonderful than the prospect of a Prodnose-free programme. The latest instalment in my Dictionary for Today.
Oh, dear, not that again.
Quiet blemish. Today, the letter P for Palace. Any large and over-decorated building, preferably a cinema or theatre.
Here we go.
Park, a space reserved for motor cars. Pedestrian, anybody who is knocked down by a motor car.
Rot.
Permanent, term used chiefly of the wave in a woman's hair, which lasts for a few months only.
Balderdash.
Picnic, a meal of tinned food eaten in a car by the roadside. Pilgrim, one who comes south for a football match.
Oh.
Pint, a glass containing about 3/4 of a pint.
Cynic.
Pleasure, the life of, eating the same food with the same people, hearing the same music, and staying in the same kind of hotel in all the same resorts in Europe.
Poppycock.
Primitive, description of any hotel which has no cocktail bar, dance floor, or swimming pool.
Piffle, is there much more of this?
There will be if you don't shut up. Prodigy, a child who plays the piano when he ought to be asleep in bed.
I'm saying nothing.
And thinking less, no doubt. Propaganda, what the other side says. Prophet, anyone who says that anything will happen. And finally...
Oh, what a pity.
Pugilist, a businessman who is occasionally compelled to box a round or two in the interests of his business. There, enough pearls for now.
Pearls? Ha!
Yes, and now to remove the swine I cast them before. Back to your sty, hogshead.
Ah!
I'd forgotten how enjoyable that could be. More from my dictionary next time. And now a cautionary tale of a simple girl ready to sacrifice her innocence to taste the decadent delights of the metropolis. Simple is the important word here, I think.
I have no regrets. The no-holds-barred account of an innocent country girl's first visit to London and all that befell her there. By Clara Garrick, Miss.
London. The grey city with all its bright lights and its wickedness. Would not any girl have done what I, simple Clara Gorick, did? I first met Vespasian de Lumiere while I was shoring up a derrick for Farmer Furbelow, and he easily persuaded me to exchange the dull rounds of the buyer for the glittering splendours of London. He bought 2 cheap day returns.
This way, there will be more money left for chocolates and caviar. Come, my dear.
Oh, how how can I ever forget my arrival in London? The vast station with crowds of porters sleeping on mailbags. The taxi that refused to take us because the driver wasn't going our way. The bus that got stuck in a traffic jam after just a few yards. It was all exactly like my dreams. Vespasian suggested we went somewhere for lunch, so we left the bus and walked the streets waiting for a restaurant to open. Then we got caught in a crowd watching an accident.
Made a mess of his waistcoat.
Oh, yeah, it
did. Here, Gertie, that's just the colour I want the curtain.
Get me through, I'm a doctor.
Eventually, we found somewhere, and Vespasian called for caviar and wine.
No wine, we haven't got a licence. I can give you a tea or something.
We left, but by now we were very hungry, so we had buns and milk in a cafe. Vespasian made me eat two and even ordered butter with the second.
Now, how about a theatre, eh, Clara? Oh.
We found a theatre, but Vespasian said it was not fit for me to see. So we went and sat in the park. But Jamps bothered us, so we left. We walked the streets until we were tired, and then we went into an hotel and sat down in the lounge.
Look here, my sweet. I know it hasn't been much of a day, but I've got one last surprise for you. Here.
My purse!
Yes? Look, don't make a fuss. I'll pay you back for the tickets and things eventually. You'll see. Don't look at me accusingly like that, you wretched girl.
In the train, Vespasian said London was all rot. Seems he's only a cowman after all. And his real name is Jim. How easily a girl can be deceived. Still, I shall never regret my peep at the life of London.
Pierce cooks in a new hat, says the headline on page 2 of today's paper. Well, rat me, says Jolly Jack Hopkins with a light laugh. This must be one of the new electrically heated hats, which enable ladies to toast their muffins on their heads as they go along the street. Of course, in the old days, before electricity, ladies who wished to cook in hats had to make a fire of twigs in the crown, and the lining was often charred beyond repair. Whereas today, the rarely fashionable hat contains, instead of a lining, a rack for plates and little shelves for spices and condiments.
You don't think that headline means only to imply that the said Pieris was wearing a hat whilst cooking upon a stove with a regular pan or skillet, do you?
Why, Prudnose, what an amusing twist on the logic of the thing.
But that wasn't meant to be an amusing observation.
In which case, let me assure you, you achieved your objective admirably.
You know they say that sarcasm is the lowest form of wit.
Yes, how good it is. Of me to humble myself to your level.
I don't have to stay here and listen to these insults, you know.
Indeed, such is the wonder of radio that you could listen to them almost anywhere nowadays. Along with this musical gem, inspired by the heart-rending story of a woman who reunited with her only brother after 18 years, hit him with her umbrella because he still wore a bowler. The cad.
Oh, we'd waited 12 years for us coming, with welcome displayed on the mat. But imagine our rage when he turned up in a little round wickerwork hat. He was gentle and loving as ever, with a small bit of fish for the cat. But the family just couldn't stomach his little round wickerwork hat. No wonder the neighbours were sneering. No wonder our welcome fell flat. In a sorrowful silence we kissed him in his little round wickerwork hat. Oh, was this what we'd prayed for and dreamed of in our loneliness, impudent brat? To return after 12 years of exile in a little round wickerwork hat. Oh.
And now an insight into the latest developments in the contemporary arts, with an emphasis, no doubt, on the con.
Hello, I'm Julian Churning. Welcome to Art Look, the programme in which we look, as it were, at the arts. Tonight, with the help of our regular critics, Edgar Treehouse.
Good evening, or whatever time it is when this goes out.
Cynthia Madder.
Hello, everybody.
And William Morris.
How do you do?
Very well, thank you. With the help of all three distinguished critics, we shall be looking at three very different events in the world of the arts. Well, there isn't much time left after my introduction, I'm afraid. So, Edgar Treehouse, we'll come straight to you. Can the publication of a fourth volume of the list of Huntingdonshire cabmen truly be described as an event? Is it, as they say, a good read?
Well, Julian, let me begin by quoting just some of the reviews garnered by Volume 3 and printed on the rear of the jacket of the new volume. This list of Huntingdonshire cabmen is sure to be the standard work on the subject, full of quotable bits, satisfying, vital, human, dynamic, a humble litany that clutches at the heart, a triumph.
You haven't read it, have you?
Pardon?
You haven't read the book.
No, I've had rather a busy week, what with Margaret leaving, but the jacket is very interesting.
So, Cynthia, we come to you next. You've been to see the Norwegian pianist Shem Piledriver, I hope.
Yes, I have, Julian. Everybody, the arrival in this country of Shem Piledriver is a musical event of the utmost importance.
Indeed.
For a start, Piledriver is, to my mind, the only satisfactory interpreter of the progressive and, indeed, percussive music of Sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
What can I say?
Yes, quite. And the concert?
Oh, crikey, yes. Well, where does one begin? Piledriver at the Boeotian Hall, giving a rare performance of the Electric Drill Suite Opus 26 by, of course, Sledgehammer. I have the programme here, and if I can just read to you from it...
Excuse me, Cynthia... But you did go to the Boeotian Hall, didn't you?
Oh, yes, of course, Julian. And the whole piece sounded just thrilling, even from outside in a taxi. And I think, in fact, it may have benefited from...
Yes, well, we come to you, finally, Williams Morris, or should we not bother?
Oh, bother away, Julian, bother away.
Jolly good.
Yes, I went to see Bad Hat, the centenarian Turkish violinist, give his first recital of the season at the Grizzly Galleries. Mm. The undeniable charisma of the man is still there, but I'm afraid I have to tell you that he's now so old and so sleepy that he sometimes, for 10 minutes at a time, actually sits in silence, snoring at his fiddle. Last night, I'm sorry to say, he also spent a good 15 minutes bowing his arm rather than his violin until an attendant pointed this out to him. Not his fault, he is rather deaf. However, despite these eccentricities, I would still say that Bad Hat remains the finest exponent of the work of Cabbage that we have.
Yes, you would say that, wouldn't you?
What do you mean?
Well, thank you all for coming along here today, which is about all that some of you actually managed to do. From me, Julian Churning, and a rather bohemian edition of Art Look, goodbye.
Until next week, goodbye.
That was Beachcomber by the Way, adapted for radio by Michael Barfield, with Richard Ingrams, who appeared as Beachcomber. John Wells, June Whitfield, John Sessions, Joan Sims, Patricia Routledge, Simon Greenall, Brian Bowles, and Henrietta Garden played the other characters. Your announcer was Perkins, and the producer was Thompson.